Wednesday, February 3. Is that correct?
February 3. And we're now dealing with chapter 23 and 24, digestion and absorption of dietary lipids. We're looking at the front page. We just had some very nice Oreo cookies. Let's take a look at what happens to the fate of the oils that you have. This diagram is not in your book, so this is the only place it's going to be. So they got the triacylglycerol emulsified droplet, I mean, very fine droplet. Bile acids come in along with lipase and colipase and begin to act on the fat. Now, do you remember what the structure of the fat is? What's the backbone for the structure of a fat? Anybody remember what the backbone is for a fat? What's the name of the backbone? Glycerol, that's exactly correct. And you can write this very easily. I'm drawing a glycerol backbone on the thing, and then I'm going to draw in an ester bond, three ester bonds. That's why it's called an acyl, because an ester bond is many times called acyl. And then you have an R1, an R2, and an R3. And these are basically 10 to 18 carbon even chains. And they can be the same or different chains there, starting with the 10 or 18 include the carbon of the carbonyl group, carboxyl group, I should say. Anyway, so that's a classic fat or oil, depending on if it's liquid or solid at room temperature. What happens is that the lipases begin to act on it and typically cleave here at position 1 and 3. And so you get two fatty acids and then you get this 2-monoacylglycerol. In other words, that you have a glycerol here, you got a hydroxy here, a hydroxy here, and then you've got a fatty acid on the 2 position. That's where that 2-monoacylglycerol comes from. Then these things form a micelle. Now, what's a micelle? A micelle is, of course, a droplet of an oil that's surrounded by... this has got fatty acids in it. It's got that 2-monoglycerol. But then it's got, either it's got phospholipids on the surface to help solubilize it, or it's got the bile salts that help, they're on the surface, hiding the fatty acids and the 2-monoglycerols from the water and enabling it to remain solubilized. So that's a little micelle. It's just got a single layer of a phospholipid of some sort on the outside of it, typically. What happens in then, that crosses, this is the lumen. That lumen means that's the interior of your gut. It then crosses into this enterocyte, or the epithelial cells that line the digestive tract. So the digestive tract is this big thing, and there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of convoluted loops and things, and just all kinds of loops. And if I was to simply take a little segment of this and then blow it up, you'd see that there are cells on the surface here of each loop, these epithelial cells. And if I was to blow up the epithelial cell, you'd see that on the surface of the epithelial cell, if I can draw this, there's also hundreds and hundreds of loops. So there's microscopic villi that are sticking out here, and This diagram right here is what's pictured right here, this thing. This is enterocyte, surface of enterocyte. Surface of enterocyte. So there's a tremendous amount of surface area in the in your gut. Tremendous. There's hundreds of square feet of absorption area in your gut. And so what happens is then this 2-monoacylglycerol comes in and the fatty acid comes in. And notice if it's long chain, that means if it's like 14, 16, 18, it then goes to the endoplasmic reticulum where it gets repackaged back as a triacylglycerol. And that then that fat is repackaged as a chylo, as a lipoprotein. So what I'd like for you to right above this say lipoprotein. Dietary lipoprotein. Dietary lipoprotein. And it has only one name, the dietary lipoprotein. It has one form, one name. It's called a chylomicron. Say chylomicron. Chylomicron. So all the fat, all the long-chain fatty acids and fats that you just consumed will eventually in your gut be repackaged as this chylomicron and get dumped, notice, dumped, if you would, into the lymph system. Into the lymph system. If you have a medium chain fatty acid, 10, 12, 14, I mean it varies genetically between people, 10, 12, 14 fatty acids long, it's simply transported through the cell and dumped into the blood. So that capillary is actually blood. The lymph is the lymph capillary. On the fatty acid there, please say, how can I say this? Transported by albumin proteins. So the fatty acids that you see there typically attach to the albumins that are in your blood and ride along there until they get to their destination on the albumin proteins of your blood. So how many of you love lasagna for Sabbath lunch? Raise your hand. I know I do. Fortunate enough, I'm not lactose intolerant. Yes. So I love lasagna for lunch. And so I have a big old double serving of lasagna with four cheese lasagna. And it lands in my stomach. And of course, my adipose tissues are going, yay, more fat, yay. It hits my small intestine. And then my pancreas and my gallbladder start going to work on that stuff and produce all kinds of chylomicrons that get dumped in my lymph system. Now, what pump is there for the lymph system? Is there a pump for the lymph system? Is there a pump for the blood? And what's it, what organ is that called? Heart. Is there a pump for the lymph system? No, there isn't. Not an involuntary pump. There is a voluntary pump, and guess what it primarily consists of? The major muscles in your legs and arms is what pumps it. So if you are like me and have done this before, you have a big lasagna meal, then you take a nap, all the lymph is getting loaded up with fat, and it's laying there because guess what you are? Laying there. Okay, this is not so good on your circulatory system. Eventually, however, if you're intelligent, you will take a nice brisk walk for, you know, a half an hour after you stop eating. You take a quick 20-minute walk, and that gets your circulatory system going, gets your lymph system going, and all these chylomicrons then get dumped into the major blood system. So they get pumped from your gut. And they end up having the major portal between the lymph system and the blood is right up around your aorta where there's lots of mixing and stuff and it gets dumped in right there. All right. If they're medium, I gave you, my medium length was 6 to 10. I was giving you probably the longer ones. But anyway, believe what's written here, not what I said. Fatty acids pass through the unmodified move to blood on the liver. Above, long-chain fatty acids, FA, become bound to an intestinal fatty acid binding protein. I fabibita, which transports a fatty acid to the endoplasmic reticulum, ER, not shown in the diagram. Therefore, there they reform triglycerides, TGs, and are repackaged into a class of material called apolipoproteins. If the TGs come from dietary sources, the apolipoprotein is called a chylomicron. The chylomicron is transported to the lymph system, where eventually dumped into large body veins via the thoracic duct above and below. Formation of the mixed micelles. Mixed micelles allow the hydrolyzed lipid to cross the unstirred aqueous boundary layer at the intestinal wall. What? Yes. What that means is, if you hear the gut, the intestinal tract is surrounded by dozens and dozens of involuntary smooth muscles that just constantly churn it when there's food in there. And so that keeps this all the liquid in here kind of churning and being mixed. But if you would, at the microscopic sense, if you would begin to look at the cells that line the intestinal tract and look at the microvilli that are on the surface of these cells, there's a layer of water that is not particularly agitated by the physical movement of all this, of the smooth muscles. That boundary right there is called the unstirred aqueous boundary layer. Unstirred aqueous boundary layer. Okay. How do they know it exists? Well, because they have people who have trouble with their gallbladder and don't dump the necessary materials into the intestinal tract, and the lipids, while they're being in fact degraded by the lipases and to form fatty acids and the 2-acylglycerols, without having these micelles, these things that help dissolve the fat. The fat can't get past this unstirred aqueous boundary layer that literally lines the entire intestinal tract. At a very microscopic sense, it's not very thick at all. It's just a thin film on the surface of the cells. But without the micelles, these fatty acids and the 2-acylglycerol is not soluble enough to get past there. And they were not absorbing any of the fats that they were getting if they didn't have the creation of these mixed micelles, which requires bile salts. Bile salts. Salts. Bile salts. All right. Pardon me. Okay. Chylomicron would eventually dumped in the blood using large veins. Now, let's take a look at some of the lipoproteins, or apolipoproteins. We've discovered here exogenous is dietary and endogenous lipids. Obviously, how many of you have fat deposits in your body? How many of you would like to have a percent body fat of about 2 to 3, or let's say 6? 6% body fat. Raise your hand. Good. All the men should have raised their hand. All right? 6% body fat. This is the 6% body fat is the... who's a handsome guy that has lots of muscles? I mean, current guy. You know Matthew McConaughey? No? He's, six-pack. You know what I'm saying? Not much body. That's about 6 to 10% body fat. Okay. Now, does a woman want to have 6 to 10% body fat? Yeah. Needs more fat for the man. Why is that? There's actually important
For pregnancy.
Exactly right. Can you be so thin that you can't get pregnant?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Right, and also much of the secondary sexual characteristics that a man is attracted to a woman has to do with the peculiar fat deposits that exist on a woman's body. The curves, vive la différence, as the French would say. So, you have fat deposits that have to be moved back and forth because there are women who are you know, in excellent physical condition, but have appropriate fat deposits. And so as they exercise, the fat needs to move back and forth between the fat deposit region and your muscles that are being, they're using them. And so those lipids are called endogenous lipids. The chylomicrons, as I mentioned earlier, are exogenous. That comes from the diet. It moves through the blood to the capillaries, the peripheral tissues, encounters the enzyme lipoprotein lipase, PLP, on the inner surface of the capillary, release fatty acids in intercellular fluid next to muscle and adipose tissues. Fatty acids are absorbed by these cells and then either used or reformed as fat. The chylomicron remnants are absorbed by the liver. The cholesterol of the chylomicron is formed into bile salts, other lipids, and density lipids, or degraded. Now, let's take a look quickly at our diagram here. What am I talking about? We have an exogenous pathway and an endogenous pathway. If you want to be lost, if you like to be have your main thing to be confused in graduate school, go do work on these lipoprotein pathways in the body. This is an extraordinarily simplified version. There are dozens of different types of lipoproteins floating around in your circulatory system. All of them not known where they all go, but we do have some general idea. So you have the dietary fat comes in the intestine. It gets repackaged as, all dietary fat gets repackaged as what? Chylomicrons. Now the chylomicron is actually not just fat. Notice I said it's a lipoprotein. Now, for example, let's see here. May I borrow your bottle here? Huh. You see this thing right here? What's that called? Barcode. The actual name of it is UPC, Universal Product Code. All right? And so everything in the store has one of these. Is that correct? And you know where it came from, and you know where it's supposed to go, and blah, 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 blah. These lipoproteins, like here, are also tagged with UPCs, Universal Product Codes. But they're not with a barcode, they're with proteins. So this chylomicron is actually tagged with a protein that helps direct its fate. What did I just say? I said that the chylomicron is tagged with a protein that helps determine its fate. Now notice here, notice apolipoprotein, A1 and B. What that means is here, apolipoprotein. The apolipoprotein is in fact the protein part of the lipoprotein unit. This is the barcode, A1, B, and there's literally dozens of proteins that are embedded in the chylomicrons and these other density fats that you see here. So this chylomicron has a particular tag on it, some letter designation typically, that helps direct its fate. Well, eventually, the chylomicrons move from the lymph systems into the circulatory system, and the microns eventually get to the capillaries where, I mean, this diagram is, I mean, it's just, this is out of proportion. But on the surface, on the interior surface of the capillaries, there is a protein that literally sticks its arm out into the capillary flow and grabs the chylomicrons as they pass by, metaphorically, and acts on the lipid in there, that lipoprotein lipase, and releases fatty acids at the capillary level. Those free fatty acids move into the interstitial fluid and are either absorbed by the adipose tissue, if that's where it was released, or absorbed by the muscle for energy or for fat storage, if that's where it was released. Eventually, these chylomicrons keep shrinking, 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 although the tag doesn't change, and the tag eventually ends up being recognized by a receptor in the liver. The liver is where all this business with the tags and the lipoproteins end up going. This is the grand, the Piccadilly Circus, as it were, the great traffic circle of the body for lipoproteins. So the liver then can take this dietary cholesterol and takes endogenous cholesterol, that's cholesterol that you make and develop, and also fats and oils, oils and stuff that's floating in your circulatory system, repackages them into a variety of other kinds of lipoproteins, VLDLs, IDLs. The extrahepatic, what does that extrahepatic mean? What do you think that means, extrahepatic? Outside of the liver. That's exactly correct. Extrahepatic tissue makes this HDL. So the HDL is not made by the liver, but it's made by other tissues besides that. And so let's take a look at the VLDLs, IDLs, HDLs, and see what they have to say. So, here are the VLDLs, IDLs, LDLs, HDLs. Does anybody know what VLDL stands for?
Very low density.
Yes. So, very low density, and what's the last L mean?
Lipoprotein.
Very low density, a lipoprotein. What do you think the HDL means?
High density.
Now, let's think about our fundamental organic chemistry. We know that hydrocarbons float on water. Is that right? Yeah, usually. Well, if they're hydrocarbon, I don't know of a hydrocarbon that does not float on water. Now, if it has a halogen with it, that's a different issue. But in terms of a pure hydrocarbon, they're always less what than water? Less dense. Well, fats are primarily lots and lots of hydrocarbons with a little bit of this polar group and the triacylglycerol. So what this is saying here is that the lipoprotein is composed of two pieces, the fats and the protein. The fat is less dense than water. The protein typically is more dense than water. So when you have a very low density lipoprotein, that means the ratio of fat to protein is high. There's a lot of fat relative to the protein. But if you go to the other extreme, you have an HDL, high-density lipoprotein. That means there's not very much fat compared to the protein. So the HDL has a high amount of protein, not very much fat. The VLDL has a lot of fat relative to the amount of protein that it has. So VLDLs are typically produced by the liver. They transport transported peripheral tissue, where the endogenous lipids have the same fate as exogenous lipids. Doesn't matter where the lipids come from. The loss of lipids from the VLDL creates IDLs, which is intermediate density lipoproteins, to which the action of the PLP. I didn't lowercase that. That LPL here and the LPL here is the same thing. Produces low-density lipoproteins. The low-density lipoproteins are absorbed by extrahepatic tissue and microphages, not shown. HDLs are synthesized in intestines and liver, not only the extrahepatic tissue shown. So HDLs are synthesized by the liver, but for the sake of argument, they said just the intestines or extrahepatic tissue. Now, when you go have a blood test, and you don't have them right now because you're too young. They don't do these tests on you that I know of, at least, unless you have symptoms for it. They do an electrophoresis panel. And since the LDLs and HDLs and VLDLs are protein, you can electrophorese the protein. And when those proteins are electrophoresed and they do a scan, they can measure the relative amount of HDLs versus regular old LDLs or IDLs or VLDLs, LDL to HDL. Now, the common man who is a good person, doesn't have much science training, but that doesn't mean they're not smart. They haven't chosen to become scientists. They're told that when you're 40 years old and you go have your first physical, they go check you out and they tell you your bad cholesterol to good cholesterol ratio. What they're actually doing is, cholesterol is a molecule. These same molecule cannot be both good and bad at the same time. But for the sake of communicating to the general public, they use the term good cholesterol and bad cholesterol. What they're actually looking at are the LDLs versus the HDLs. The HDLs, because they have a relatively low amount of fat compared to the protein, are fat scavengers. They pick up fat that's floating freely in the bloodstream. So, and as they move from HDL and pick up fat in the bloodstream, they move from being HDLs to being LDLs. And the actual, their protein tag actually changes. So what they want, what physicians are looking for, are when they do this electrophoretic scan or panel, they're looking for the ratio of LDL to HDL. And so when the LDL, when there's a lot of LDLs and not very many HDLs, you are in a threat for accumulating fat on the interior of your capillaries in your heart and get set up for a heart attack. Whereas if you have a low ratio of LDL compared to HDL, in other words, there's relatively a high amount of HDL compared to the LDL, there's, because it's LDL over HDL. It's this. It's LDL over HDL. Okay. So when this fraction is large, it means you have too many LDLs. If this fraction is small, it means you have a positive, you have a high level of HDLs, which means excess fat is being scavenged from your bloodstream. The LDL-HDL ratio has two components in it, actually three. It has your diet, it has your amount of exercise, and it has a genetic component. So you can eat fried chicken three times a day, four times on Sunday, barely get up from one chair to move to the couch to watch more television, and someone take a blood test on you, and you'd have a, you could have a sterling excellent ratio of LDL to HDL, just because of your genetics. You could exercise miles a day and not avoid fat like the plague and have a bad LDL to HDL ratio because of genetics. So the good cholesterol to bad cholesterol, that can be manipulated by certain drugs to help avoid heart attacks, but there's always that genetic propensity in your body. And so it's something you have to watch out for. And can women have heart attacks, ladies and gentlemen? Yes. Everybody thinks men die of heart attacks, but no. Women die of heart attacks too. It's like the second or third highest cause of death of women over 60 or 70 or something like that is heart attacks. They die of heart attacks. Here is the characteristic and function of major lipoproteins. Now, I want you to notice there's the name, chylomicrons, VLDLs, IDLs, LDLs, HDLs, HDL 2 and 3 and this kind of a thing. And note, if you would, the trend for density, if you would. Notice chylomicrons are, by definition, less dense than water. Chylomicrons are less dense than water. If you die 3 hours after eating a lasagna meal or a meal from Ruth Chris Steakhouse or something else that's very high fat, and you die, you just keel over dead, and you lay there flat, and you come to room temperature, and they do an autopsy, the upper part of all the major veins, the upper part of all the major veins, large veins and arteries, after you die, you know, there's a layer up here that's simply fat. Right there. They can cut through it, and they find a little fat right there if you die at the wrong time after a fatty meal. Woohoo! Now, is that perfectly natural? Is it okay to eat a fatty meal? Absolutely. Absolutely. You want to eat a fatty meal and then do what?
Exercise.
Exercise or move for a little while. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
We will see you on Friday. Have a great day. Please read through this and please read through chapters 23 and 24 in the text. I haven't started grading your papers yet. Your